C2 PR. Number 8B.
So we come to the subtone of love on page 3, line 4. Who would stand before a blackboard and pray? Again, you have the praying attitude. And pray the principle of mathematics to solve the problem. Well, nobody would. We have to work it out always ourselves. That we know from our first grade. The rule is already established. Again, you have a sense that everything is already established, it's unchangeable, you can't change that. And it is our task to work out the solution. How it comes out, the working out of the solution. Love is the savior, love is the salvation, love is that which solves a problem. So how are you going to solve the problem? You come now to the climax of love. Shall we ask? Again, the standpoint of prayer, asking. Shall we ask the divine principle of all goodness to do his own work? Can you see she compares mathematics, our attitude towards mathematics, and says we should have the same attitude towards God. We don't ask the principle of mathematics to solve the problem, therefore we shouldn't ask the principle of God to solve the problem. Why shouldn't we ask it? Because it's already done. Why should we ask the divine principle of all goodness to do his own work? His work is done. Can you see the tone of love? So she leads really the thinking, the desiring attitude up to the point where it says, why did you at all ask anything when everything is already at point of perfection? Can you see, it's a wonderful introduction she gives into the whole standpoint of Christian Science. He says, why do you want to stand outside? And why don't you go out from perfection? And therefore she has to reason it out first with the student who comes from the outside and says, I show you a way to come inside so that from then on you can go out from perfection. So his work is done. That's the tone of love. His work is done. And we have only to avail ourselves. So instead of praying and asking and petitioning, we have to avail ourselves of God's rule in order to receive his blessing, in order to receive love, love's reward, love's answer. That's the answer prayer, which enables us to work out our own salvation. So the asking becomes now the availing ourselves of God's rule to use the science of being, the science of Christian Science, or the divine principle, and to work out our own salvation from the point of view of perfection. So this is the tone of love. I tried to summarize it and said, willingness to avail ourselves of this divine rule. Which divine rule? You know, it's a funny thing. It's really funny how we don't ask questions when we read the text. How we take everything as given, as natural. And it isn't natural. For instance, here. In this paragraph on mind as love, where we come to the solution, how to work out the solution, she talks twice about the rule. It's on line 6, he says, the rule is already established. And then on line 10, that we should only avail ourselves of God's rule, which is apparently already established. Tell me, please, what is that rule that is already established? Did we think about that? The pith of it here is that he says, now you have the rule, therefore you work out your own salvation. And we say, wonderful, we have the rule. Where is it? Yeah? Isn't it interesting? Now where is the rule? Is she as dumb as that she says, here is the rule, doesn't give the rule? Isn't it? So she's not as dumb as that. So where is the rule? Yeah? What do you feel? Huh? The rule is given, namely to go from mind as mind, to mind the spirit, to mind the soul, to mind as principle, life, truth. And when you are a truth, you have the rule. And you use it and you solve your problem. Isn't that clear?
Yes.
You see these revelatory books that have been written by revelation, they don't follow really the logic of other sciences. See, in another science, if they write textbook, they have to write out everything. They would have to write out, now the rule is given. Now, what is the rule I have given you? Well, the rule I have given you is this and this and this and this. You have a caption, the rule, and so on. It's spelled out properly. These books that are written by revelation, they are written differently. They say things without explaining things. They state things. They reveal things without reasoning out with the reader to the nth degree what it means. They just give it and say, here it is. Those who find it will be happy. Those who don't find it will have to search for it even more until they find it. We are different. You see, my books I write, they are not of that caliber. My books are always so that I say, I tell you. The textbook doesn't say, I tell you. The textbook just throws all these truths at your head and say, here it is. Now, try if you can do something with it. If you can't, seek. So this is a great difference between our books and the textbook. This textbook is a book of revelation. My books are books of reasoning out things with the reader. So the rule is already established. Therefore, if we ask the right question, say, now what is the rule? We say, well, the rule is given. If you want to solve your own problems, don't start by solving your problems. That's mind as love. You better start with mind as mind. And first see what is your desire. Is your desire directed to the right object or not? Is your desire pure? Mind as spirit. Is your desire pure? Is it directed towards God or to any little benefits? Is your desire so that you are willing to change your hard head and your stubbornness? Mind as soul, God doesn't change. You can't change there anything. So change. Are you willing to change? Do you, in mind as principle, really ask for the signs of being? Or do you ask a religion? Do we ask something superstitious? Or are you actually wanting the science of being, principle, so that you get into harmony with being? are you really seeing that you already get more than what you can accept? Mindless life. Can you see that you are already at the source of all existence, which is pouring forth more than you need? Is your inward attitude so that you see that you are already flooded and flooded and flooded by the superabundance of life, or not? Or are you still a poor beggar, begging, begging, begging for something? Are you still at the point where you think you have to tell God Almighty what to do? Or is your inward attitude so that you accept that God has already done right and is doing right without you telling him? That you accept that things that go on are right? That God is working right? If you do that, then you have found your rule. And now you only have to go through this rule to avail ourselves of God's rule. And to go through those subtones and subtones and subtones until inwardly you are so at one with that true prayer of mind that then your work is done. And that answers your question. Is that clear? Now, I ask you something again without wanting an answer. Isn't it so that now we only have done a page and a half, so to say, with that prayer, that you can see that when one can interpret the text scientifically, instead of just reading it and letting somehow the emotions be awakened, somehow being the feelings being awakened, that is a great difference between those two things. That seeing what it means, seeing the order, you see, in which it is stated, that gives understanding. Order is fundamental to understanding. There is no understanding without seeing order, without seeing structure. And that's why I've taken it rather slowly, so that we can really see what one can do with the text. I want to spend much more time on this first prayer. And therefore, don't be irritated and think, well, it's already Tuesday, how on earth are we going to finish again this week? Huh? We know Max, he never gets on at the beginning. Huh? And then at the end, he has to hurry right through. Well, I want to do that, actually. Because it is what I want to do is always to have a good foundation. And if with an example like the first prayer we get a real good foundation and can easily and slowly talk about the various aspects, this is showing the method. Once we have the method, then the other subjects with which we can use the same method are much easier. Therefore, we can take them much quicker. Now, we just want to really make the best of these few paragraphs. You remember the first or second day it was, or first or second hour, I was talking about that a truth taken out of its context is no more a scientific truth. It's still a truth, but no more a scientific truth. And you were a bit shocked, because ordinarily one says a truth is a truth, and it stays a truth, and it's nothing but the truth. And this is not true.
And you were shocked and said, golly, what does he say? All right, let's take examples. I take further examples in the days to come. Let's just take that example which we had before. If we would open the textbook, as one very often does, and just begins to read where the eye falls on it, we would perhaps have opened it at page 3, at the tone where it says, well, the rule is already established, and it is our task to work out the solution. This is a truth. I've seen this is a truth. It's in the textbook. Now, if you take that statement out of its context, and if you start, say, if you would start with that, say it now, that's fine. That's what Mrs. Eddy said. This is a truth, and that truth is going to help me. Is it going to help you? No. Huh? Why not? Huh? Why not? Because it's taken out of context. It's taken out of the preceding context of mind up to mind as truth, which gives the rule. If we take that out of context and put it right at the beginning, say, at the beginning of the chapter, she could have said that. She would have been able to say, look here, you know, God is God, and God has a rule, and that rule is established, and you just have to take the rule of God, and then you work out your own salvation. Then you would have said, what is that rule? Nobody would have said what that rule is. So it would be a truth which is not a scientific truth, because its truth content would be nil. Because we would use the term rule or the concept rule without having explained what it contains. Can you see that? The truth content would be nil. See, that is what makes me up go the tree, the palm tree. When people say, you know, the pith of any religion is that God is all, or that God is infinite. There is no truth content in it. There is no truth content. You remember how the philosopher Popper, Karl Popper, you know, explained it so clearly. He said, any dumb people, anyone who is really dumb, can really state the biggest truth. And we are quite shocked. We say, oh no, that needs really, really big people to state the truth that cannot be falsified. Well, that needs really big people. No, he said, it only needs dumb people. And he gives a nice example. He says, nobody can falsify the statement, it will rain. It will rain. That's the biggest truth, that's an absolute truth. And it has no truth content. Because you don't know when it will rain. If it is in 3 years or so, in the Sahel zone, they wait for 3 years. You don't know if it will rain heavily, so that it's of any use, or if it just will dripping a little bit. You don't know at which place it will rain. If it will rain somewhere in the forest down in Brazil, or in the desert, that's a great difference. You don't know anything about it, and yet this statement is so true that it cannot be falsified. Do you see, in religion, we have the same thing. All religion come finally up to the point God is all. or God is infinite. More than this we do not have to know. Oh yes, much more, because it has no truth content. It has no information content. It doesn't say anything about the inner nature. And that is what Mrs. Eddy tries to do right here with the first prayer. See? With that very first prayer, she says, I'm first of all going to show you, anyway, in a hinting way, that God is all and infinite. But I show you the truth content of it. Have you noticed, as we went through, that in these few lines that she has, that when she was describing God, it was always through terms like all, infinite, and unchangeable. These three terms appeared and reappeared all over. I have written them out. That God is the infinite. That God bestows, I come now to the all. All good. It's the all-loving. God knows all. God is the infinite mind. God is all existent blessedness, the divine principle of all goodness. Then she brings in that he is. God is already all. The infinite mind already comprehends all. The open fount is pouring forth. God is the same yesterday and today and forever. God is immutably right. The rule is established. His work is done. Can you see? She depicts now God constantly with those overall concepts of infinite, all, and isness. Huh? But she could see that this is not enough, that she has to explain the truth content of these general terms. And therefore she introduces the nature of God. You will see that afterwards the other prayers that come, they don't introduce, so to say, the definition of God, the nature of God. Here she does it right away. And because what does she say about the nature of God? She says first in mind, God is mind that knows already all. Then she gives the sense that God is spirit, that is substance, that is not void, that he is something. Then she says God is unchangeable. Then in principle she said God is a science of being. Then in life she said God is the source of all being. In truth, she says, God is already doing right. And in love, she said, God's work is already done. So she gives already seven big characteristics of the infinite. She doesn't leave it at the infinite, but introduces in a nice, tender way, so to say, the definition of God. Perhaps you remember how we often, in the earlier summer school, we would say, why is it that Mrs. Eddy writes a textbook on Christian Science, which is a textbook on the nature of God, and gives the definition of God only nearly at the end of the 465 pages? Therefore, the first time, so to say, we said, she lets the cat out of the bag and says, now what is God? God is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Why on earth didn't she say that right at the beginning so that we would know? Humanly, if we would write to have a book on God, we would start out that way, I guess. Huh? We would say, well, I'm going to tell you something about God. God is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. She doesn't. And we, humanly, one felt, well, this is disagreeable, and never quite knows what she means by God. She only talks about God. But actually she does, only that she is much more tender than we are. We are much too crude when we approach the spiritual subject. She tenderly
introduces, nearly through the back door of prayer, she introduces the sevenfold nature right at the beginning. We already know after two pages, not even two pages, we already know the main characteristics of God. Mind that knows all, spirit that is substance, soul that is changeless, principle that has a science that expresses itself as a science of harmony, life that is the source of all existence pouring forth, truth that is doing right and is right, and love that this work is done, its perfection is established. Why do you want to do anything except to go out from perfection? Can you see that? Because when we come to the next prayers, some other aspect is really approached, and not so much anymore to explain right away the nature of God. Yes. Well, that brings us near our lunch time. This afternoon we'll still take the prayer of mind again, and we'll see how we can restructure that prayer of mind according to different aspects of prayer.